Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI prepares to travel to Cameroon and Angola for his first apostolic journey to Africa. Speaking about a film ironically entitled Welcome, Peter Malone shines the light on the toll still taken by wars, revolutions and persecutions in our day and time. Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright has a special Lenten meditation for those who suffer through poor governance or structural injustice. Pope Benedict XVI is preparing to travel to Cameroon and Angola, where he says he will bring with him Christ and the Good News. The Pope made this announcement on Sunday before praying the Angelus with those gathered in St. Peter's Square. He also gave details of his journey, which begins on Tuesday the 17th of March with his scheduled arrival in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, and ends with his return to Rome on Monday the 23rd of March. During his visit, Pope Benedict will also visit Luanda in Angola, a country, he said, that after a long civil war has found peace again and is now called to rebuild itself in justice. Charles Collins reports.
The Pope says he will carry to Africa the good news of the cross of Christ, whose grace generates an irresistible power of peace and of profound radical reconciliation. The Pope was speaking in St. Peter's Square before praying the Angelus. He leaves for his 11th apostolic journey on Tuesday, March 17th, and returns on March 23rd. He will go to Cameroon and Angola. With this visit, Pope Benedict says he wants to embrace the entire African continent, its thousands of differences and its profound religious spirit, its painful wounds and its enormous possibilities and hopes.
This Tuesday I leave Rome for my visit to Cameroon and Angola. My presence in the great continent of Africa forms part of the preparation of the Special Assembly of the Synod of Bishops dedicated to the theme, the Church in Africa in Service to Reconciliation, Justice and Peace. I ask each of you to join me in praying that my visit will be a time of spiritual renewal for all Africans and an occasion in which civic and religious leaders will strengthen their resolve to walk the path of justice, integrity and compassion. May the lives of African men, women and children be transformed in hope.
The Pope says he is departing with the awareness of having nothing else to offer and give to those he meets except for Christ and the good news of his cross, the mystery of supreme love, of a divine love that overcomes all human resistance and makes it possible even to forgive and love one's enemies. Pope Benedict said the Church does not pursue economic, social, and political goals. The Church proclaims Christ, certain that the gospel can touch the hearts of all and transform them, thus renewing persons and societies from within. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. As Charles was saying, it is a new chapter for the papacy of Benedict XVI, who travels to Africa for the first time since his election in April 2005. And as the Pope himself was explaining, the trip will unfold in two parts. In Cameroon, he will meet with bishops from the entire continent and hand-deliver the working document for the next Synod of Bishops for Africa. In Angola, the emphasis of the voyage is on the 500th anniversary of Christian evangelization, where the faith arrived with Portuguese missionaries in the late 15th century. As always, a papal voyage brings excitement and expectation to Vatican Radio as we prepare to cover the events and listen to the Pope's words. My colleague at the English for Africa program, Festus Tarawale, is in Yaoundé right now, awaiting the Pope's arrival. He found time to sit down with me a few days ago and answer all my questions regarding the trip. Now, I understand that when the Pope journeys to another nation, it's always really upon invitation of that nation's president.
Yes, definitely. But in the case of Cameroon, you know, it's a third papal trip, so he's used to receiving popes. I mean, Pope John Paul II visited Cameroon twice in 1985, and then a very important visit in 1995 to proclaim the apostolic exhortation Ecclesia in Africa.
That That post-synodal exhortation, Festus explained to me, actually came out of the first Synod of African Bishops that had been held in Rome a year earlier, in 1994. You mentioned that Pope John Paul II's second trip was extremely important because of the apostolic exhortation. This trip, too, foresees a highlight.
Definitely. In fact, that's the high point of the visit. That's on Thursday, the 19th of March. At the stadium in Yaoundé, the Pope is going to celebrate Mass. It's important because there the whole of Africa will be represented through 41 bishops representing the 36 national episcopal conferences and 6 regional episcopal conferences. At this Mass, the Pope is going to proclaim the Instrumentum Laboris, that is the working document for the Second African Synod, which will be held in Rome from the 4th to the 25th of October this year. So, Africa represented, the Pope coming here to present and to proclaim this Instrumentum Laboris. And of course, we shouldn't forget that the theme of the Second Synod would be the Church in Africa in service to reconciliation, justice, and peace. You are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world.
Reconciliation, justice, and peace, which are words that I imagine will crop up often in his discourses, in the discourses he's due to give during this visit. You mentioned the Mass at the stadium. What other highlights do you foresee?
Well, there's also the meeting with a group of Muslim leaders earlier on that day. That's Thursday, the 19th. And then there's also a meeting with Sikh people at the Cardinal Paul Emile Leisure Centre. This cardinal was the Archbishop of Montreal. After he resigned, he retired. He left the cool and cozy life in Montreal and decided to go down to Cameroon to open a leprosy and a centre to rehabilitate sick people, so that's, I think, it's a very significant meeting also the Pope has chosen there, to show that he's very close to those who are suffering. To go back to your question on reconciliation, justice and peace, the continent of Africa is facing a lot of challenges, wars, it's poverty, diseases. The Church wants to give her own contribution, because as a community reconciled within itself, it wants to show that reconciliation trait to the others. So it has also been very active, the Church in Africa, in speaking out some of the injustices.
Oh, it has.
And some of, and has played a very significant role in promoting peace.
What are the main challenges that Cameroon as a nation is facing at this moment? And do you think the Pope will probably touch on some of the problems that President Biya is dealing with?
Well, in what I've read or in some of the interviews that I've done with the bishops and priests from Cameroon, what seems to come out is the fact that, there is widespread corruption in Cameroon. The bishops have indeed tried, to really make the fight against corruption part of their program in the school curriculum. But, when it is embedded, it's not a Cameroonian problem. It's a worldwide problem. But I think in Cameroon, it's indeed very endemic. There's also the problem of poverty. Cameroon is endowed with natural resources and it has a lot of able-bodied, people. But I think, according to statistics that I've seen, 48% still live below the poverty line.
And Festus explained to me that another issue that may come to light during the papal journey is a division that exists within the nation between the English and the French-speaking communities due to historical events. Just on a personal note, Festus, are you excited to go? What are your expectations?
I'm very much excited. It's the first papal trip and it's the first time going out to report for the radio and I hope to do my best.
sure you will.
With all the problems that I might encounter and, reporting for so vast an audience, it's a big challenge.
And someone else who's facing the same big challenge is another colleague of mine from the English for Africa programme. He will be reporting on the Pope's journey when Benedict arrives in Angola on the second leg of his African visit. His name is John Baptist Tumasime, and as he told me just before leaving, he's very excited.
Well, it's an exciting journey. and especially accompanying the Pope for the first time to a very distant country where I have not been before and where the Pope has not been before.
Right, the Pope's never been to Angola, he's never been to Africa. I think Pope John Paul II did go to Angola during his travels.
Yes, Pope John Paul was in Angola in 1992. That was the year when Angola marked the 500th anniversary of evangelization. And the Pope went to Angola to take part in the closing ceremonies.
What do you expect the highlights to be? You mentioned Pope John Paul II went to mark the celebrations of 500 years from evangelization of Angola. This trip is also along the same lines, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. The purpose of this trip, first of all, is that we have the head of the Universal Catholic Church going to meet the faithful. In a way, it is a trip that is purely pastoral. The Holy Father will be confirming the faithful in Angola in the faith and also giving them encouragement, given that Angola was the first African country south of the Sahara to be evangelized. The second purpose, the second motive, is to continue with the celebrations. The celebrations started 17 years ago, but they are continuing to show that this is a very important event. Marking 500 years is something very, very, very important. So the celebrations are continuing up to when we don't know, but the Holy Father is also going there to take part in the celebrations that began 17 years ago.
John Baptist told me that he thinks the meeting with bishops, the priests, and the catechists will prove to be one of the most important moments of this trip.
These are the people who were really in daily contact with the challenges of evangelization. The trip is about evangelization, thanking God for the gift of the faith. But these are the people who were involved every day in evangelization. So they have reasons to be satisfied for the work they are doing, but they also face challenges. And the Holy Father will be not only thanking them for this work, but also encouraging them.
Chronologically speaking, the next highlight, John Baptist foresees, will be the Pope's encounter with young people.
The Pope is going to talk to them, to encourage them, and also conscious that Angola has gone through a lot of problems. The country has been at war since independence. Even before independence, there was a war for independence. And the war continued. People speak of 27 years of civil war.
Right.
But when you add the years also before independence, it comes to over 40 years of fighting. Now, these young people carry the wounds of these conflicts. Some are unemployed. Others have taken to drugs. Bishops have told us the prostitution, drug taking, alcoholism, all sorts of things. There are so many street children in Rwanda. The Pope will be talking about all of these things and is going to give a message of encouragement to these young people, to show them that this is not the end. They have to struggle to overcome some of the challenges that they face.
And then the meeting with representatives of church movements on the promotion of gender equality.
The woman in Africa is the central figure of the family. The church treasures the family. But at the same time, the woman in Africa is one of forms part of the weakest groups, at least weak economically and socially. The message of the Holy Father to these women who are coming to meet him is very, very important. Certainly, he will be encouraging them to remain faithful, to continue to carry forward their mission as mothers, their mission as members of the family. You see, without a woman in Africa, I think the family has a very, very important, serious question mark.
During their conversations with me, both Festus and John Baptist spoke of Africa's great need for reconciliation and peace. It's impossible, they both pointed out, to focus on the beauty and on the gifts of the great continent without seeing the pain and the suffering of its people. So stay tuned for their coverage of Pope Benedict XVI's first apostolic journey to Africa, as they promise to bring a bit of both. Thank you. And now we go over to our friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at CIGNIS, the World Catholic Association for Communication, and gives us a very welcome taste of what's currently showing, perhaps, at the very cinema just around the corner from where you live. Continuing on last week's theme of xenophobia, a theme Peter introduced when speaking about Gran Torino, a film acted and directed by Clint Eastwood, today he told me of the powerful message contained in a film called Welcome, which he says is a helpful contribution to an awareness we should all have of the effects of war and upheaval in a country like Iraq. I was very impressed by what I read of Welcome. It's the kind of film I'd love to go and see and sob in the audience, as I usually do. Shall we talk about Welcome?
Yes, I'd link Welcome with, which is a French film, with Eden is West by Costa Gavras, who's right. a Greek director but works often in France, and another film called London River. The three of them screened, in fact, in the Berlin Film Festival. And to have three films on Europe, even the European Union, and the whole intercultural experience seemed to me a very strong thing. I was very glad when the results of the jury, which is sponsored by CIGNIS, which is the World Catholic Association for Communication, which I represent, and Interfilm, the Protestants, London River got an award, as did Welcome. I was very pleased, anyhow, that these themes were acknowledged by the jury.
Well, it's a very, very important theme in Europe today. I think the big tragedy of our times is the fate, the destiny of so many people who flee poverty or war or whatever, or go in search of a better life and often find death and almost always discrimination and difficulty.
Well, that's where Welcome is really a sadly ironic title, although in many ways it's an audience-friendly film, except that there's a lot of sadness in it, as you might expect.
The story is very interesting.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us about it?
Well, it's about young Iraqi men, and the research that the director and writer did was to find that at around Calais, a big group of under-25 Iraqi men.
So these illegal immigrants.
They're illegals. They've really walked and hitchhiked from Iraq right. to France, but the UK is the goal. And of course, there's the English Channel, so how are they going to get across? And I remember there were stories about people, you know, under the Eurostar and trying to get through the trucks as they do in this one. But the trucks are examined so carefully on the French side and then on the British side that most of them don't get through, even after they've handed over all their savings or the money that they brought to these, inverted commas, handlers.
Where do you want to go?
England.
England!
But the young man at the centre of Welcome is an athlete, and he decides then that he would like to swim the channel. And so he goes to a swimming pool to get swimming lessons from a very interesting coach who befriends him.
Want to learn to swim?
Yes. Cool.
Where are you from?
Iraq, sir. Kurdistan.
You know that only good swimmers can cross the channel?
And the water is too cold and the current is too strong.
Why do you want so much to go there?
And I won't go on for that, but you can see where it's leading. What I was amazed at, and I should have realised it, was the department of the French police in Calais, who were not only trying to discover and root out the illegals, but actually are looking at the citizens of Calais itself, and they can charge anyone who has given aid and shelter to the illegals, which is what happens to the swimming coach.
Et vous ramenez encore cet éclat dans l'immeuble?
Pas dans l'immeuble, chez moi.
Oui, ben c'est interdit.
Vous êtes seul?
It sounds like quite a desperate film.
It is. It doesn't seem so desperate until towards the end, you know, when he makes a couple of attempts to swim the channel. And I mentioned in my review that at one stage some information comes and I felt a kind of collective communal gasp or sob at this news, which you don't usually find in a cinema.
Is there hope at the end of this tunnel?
Not much.
Not much.
Not much. No, not much.
Well, for more on the other film Peter mentioned, the one entitled Eden is West by Oscar-winning director Costa Gavras, be sure to tune in next week at this very same time. And now, in the third week of Lent, the 40-day period of penance that leads to Easter, Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright has a special thought for those who are suffering through poor governance or structural injustice.
In so many parts of the world, people are living lives which are crushed, which are exploited by the ravages of corruption, dysfunctional government, violence, mutual hatred within community, persecution. They don't need to have Lent as 40 days to remind them of the suffering which goes on for months, years, the suffering which has wrecked the structures of their society, destroyed any expectation that they can look forward to comfort, security, to a life which many in the world regard as normal. A house, regular food, an income, good schools, good hospitals, proper treatment, proper enforcement of law, honesty in government, honesty in enterprise, in farming, in administration. Things that many in the world take for granted, and many, many more have to face the reality. They just don't exist. So Lent is a time to remind them that their daily condition, terrible as it is in the end finite. Sometime there will be change. It may be slow, the change to come. Death may overtake us before that change comes. But there will be change. In the end, evil is buried. Evil is overcome by goodness. But the difficulty with structural injustice and poor government, as I call them, is that it's very difficult to put a timescale on it. So often he says, oh, it'll be another year and then it'll all change, or 2 years, or 6 months, or another election. But the reality is that some of these problems go much deeper. And once people are infected with the evil of pride, of greed, of a sense of exploitation of the weak, of inability to take decisions to improve the basic situation of so many people. So often when that happens, the time gets longer and longer before recovery is seen. And there are many parts of the world where there has been violence and fighting and revolution and bad government, which has brought untold misery to millions and millions of people, mostly innocent, poor and exploited, and yet each one valuable to God in a unique way. And those people know Lent as a daily experience without an end. They're not powerful enough to bring about the change that everyone else can see is so needed. They haven't got the financial means to redistribute wealth in a way that would ensure justice for them. And yet, their Lent is something that they have to come to terms with on a daily basis. But it is for them also a moment to see it as Lent. Because seeing it as Lent is to see that they are in a privileged position with regard to Christ. Christ became man, suffered and died. Those of us who suffer and then die because of poor government, because of exploitation and violence, civil war, because of structural injustice, know that they are alongside Christ in a way that is deeply intimate, deeply reassuring, and in the end, full of hope. So many of people in these poor, exploited communities that I have been to exhibit a cheerfulness and an acceptance which is both courageous and deeply, deeply impressive, that they're not allowing their human spirit to be conquered by the evil of poor government, of civil war, of violence. And they're going to, as far as they can, rise above it. But nevertheless, it is Lent that they're experiencing. And it is Lent that they go on experiencing day after day after day. And when we get to Easter Sunday, they know that the experience of Easter Sunday and the experience of their daily living are a long way apart. The passion and death of Jesus is the daily occurrence in their families, whether from malnutrition, from AIDS, from war, from targeted violence, from innocent death, whatever. That is the Good Friday that they all live. And the resurrection, yes, in word, in celebration perhaps, but in reality, it's Good Friday with a tinge of hope. But it is that tinge of hope that makes their Good Friday, their perpetual Lent, worthwhile, because out of that hope there is belief in a life after death. And that life after death is a life enlarged, in life made beautiful, a life enriched with all that is best, both in the human condition as transformed by the risen Christ, and in the wonderful splendor which is the creating God, in whom we find our fulfillment, our being, our life, our love, purified through Christ. That is the bright light of the resurrection, of eternal life, which lies beyond the structural Lent, the impoverishment and violence and pain of today and tomorrow. But it is still a hope that can keep them going through these difficult times. And those of us fortunate enough to be in countries of good government, respect for law, of a certain tolerance and peace, can see in those who lack those gifts, those necessities, those rights, an opportunity to enlarge our own appreciation of the little Lent that we have, and perhaps enable us to be more sensitive, more aware how lucky we are, and give thanks for that. And at the same time, remember in prayer and in charity those who do not share those benefits yet. Amen.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.